Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This coming in,
I've been writing this
Anaheim has hours. Selected a brand new coach for the AHL team. His name, Bouchard Joel of Laval.
I can
Rockets.
Only hold my pee for over 30 minutes.
That's how they used to tell everyone that the Canadians won the Stanley Cup.
Rocket Richard has recorded his fourth 50-goal season.
His fourth goal in the Stanley Cup Finals.
Voice, man. That radio voice is so bad.
Bobby McGillicuddy.
Having to listen to that.
It's so trash.
So the guy just screaming through like the wind.
All right. The Ducks didn't play so well today.
Man. Should do that.
Thank you for listening to KCR Sports. The Anaheim Ducks were defeated gently by the San Jose Sharks 3-2 today. And I made a bunt kick.
I'm gonna kill this thing right now.
I'm gonna use this as like the intro to the show.
And again by Benning. Darnell Nurse left it in the corner. Gets up center. Perry scoops. Corey Perry.
Elliott able to shake away from Solani. It's given away to Solani. Around the front.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode, a summer edition episode of the Forever Mighty Podcast. All four guys are on tonight. Sleepy Eddie's joining us. Is your name Broke Back Pete Davidson or Broke Pete Davidson? And then Marv, we're all here today. So everyone is very happy to be here. As you can see, Eddie is very awake for this show. Are we doing video?
Yeah, we're doing video. I mean, we're trying. So. I don't know what happened.
Seattle expansion starting. The NHL draft is coming. So that was my favorite intro I think I've ever done. Eddie, I hope you keep
all rust at all.
Just put it in. But, I might as well. Yeah, it's been a while since I've been on a show. It's, Jesus, it's been a couple months, I feel like. When was the last time we were all on the show together?
Oh, I don't know. It would have been during post-game season, right? We've only done like one show since.
Wouldn't it have
been
right after the draft?
Yeah, I'm not. I think the last time we went live without any issues was during the draft lottery, and that was it. And then we tried to go live on the last show. my computer has taken a turn for the worse since the season started. Now I can no longer host live streams, so we gotta figure that out.
that kind of sounds like it's a PC problem. I don't know. I'm just saying, but. We'll figure that out. We'll get back to doing problem. Live shows eventually. But guys, we got like what 8 days till the expansion draft, right? Is it on Wednesday of next week?
Who knows, man?
I feel like all excitement of it has died.
Why?
I don't know.
Well, because of the dude in your background. That's why. Kucherov's killing the off season already.
There is excitement for the Vegas one, but I feel like. I feel like just with when the season ended, when the playoffs ended, and the way they ended, like Vancouver just dominated. There's been no hockey for the last little bit. And it feels like we're just kind of like coasting into the expansion draft this time.
Next Wednesday, Pat, you are right. Next Wednesday, yeah. Thursday off, draft on Friday. So we're going to get one day between the expansion draft and the entry draft to see if we can get up to any trade shenanigans around the league.
Yeah. And then like 2 days and then free agency, right?
Yeah. Which just means free agency's already started.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I mean, every year it's July 1st, but obviously not the last two seasons or last this season.
Right.
So that's going to be a fun week next week.
Yeah, it's going to be a blast.
Do you guys want to hop right into whether Anaheim goes? Because you got to hop into the Seattle expansion draft for sure. I mean, that's coming up in a week. Just definitely start there. Just real quick, do you guys think that they're going to go 8-1 or 7-3-1 when it comes to who they're holding?
They got to go 7-3-1. I don't know how they go 8-1. I know there's four guys you could argue protecting on defense, but the amount of guys they have that are decent guys that could get exposed on forward, I don't see how you go outside 7-3-1. Like the only teams who go 8-1 are there might be like one or two teams who go the 8-1 route, and it's because they have four exceptional defensemen that they don't want to lose, and then their forward group isn't that great. Like that's a rare scenario where a team goes 8-1.
And I don't think they did that last. I think they did 7-3-1 last time, right? I don't think they did 8-1. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that they're particularly all that different 3 years later on the defensive side of things. So I think they're still holding on to the main three. I think they leave out probably Shattenkirk, which no one's probably going to try and pick up on. And then it just comes back down to, you know, maybe your Fowler, your Lindholm. And I don't know, maybe between your Manson and your Fleury.
So who do you take, Jay? Let's start with you then. We all agree they're going to go 7-3-1. Obviously, you're taking Gibson. So on defense, who are your three defensemen?
I would say Fowler, Lindholm, and they'll keep Manson. And
who would you take?
Fleury over Manson. I would do that. I think Fleury's got the big body. And I feel he hasn't had enough of an opportunity to excel. So I would give him more of that opportunity. In Manson, I know what I have. He's kind of a fighter, but he's often injured and mostly not as good as he used to be. Like, I mean, he worked well with Lindholm at one point, but that's since gone. So at this point, if someone was willing to try and pick him off, and they might, then good. And if they don't, then all right, we still have him. So still kind of works out. I don't think he gets picked off of our roster, but exposing him I don't feel is a huge risk if he does get picked.
I'm in the same boat as you. Gibson, Fleury, Lindholm, and Fowler. Those are my four guys from the bottom up. We'll get to the forwards in just a sec. Eddie, who you take on D to hold?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to take Fowler, Lindholm, Manson. I would go the same route as Jay and take Fleury over Manson, but I would be trading Manson. I wouldn't even get to expansion draft time and have him exposed, because I think he gets taken. You know, Henrique probably gets exposed. Shattenkirk definitely gets exposed. And with Manson not there, I think Seattle could take one of those guys just to kind of get up to the cap. They already said they're not afraid to spend to the cap. And those are some decent contracts to take on to kind of do that. Like, these are still two guys who can be impactful to a startup team. But Manson's a no-brainer, I think. Out of those three, if he's available, you would take Josh Manson. And I don't think the Ducks want to lose him for nothing. So
this is going to be a topic of fire, I feel like, when we get to Steven, because that's Steven's boy. So I want to hop back. We're going to definitely jump back to Manson if you got something different. But what about you, Steve?
So I think for me, the one no-brainer is Lindholm. And I think after that, you can make the point for anybody. I think if you're asking me, it's Lindholm and Manson are the locks. And the question is Fowler or Fleury. And I would be inclined to say Fleury, because I think if you can clear Fowler's contract off the books, I think that's a positive. But I also think that is the probably worst way to get Cam Fowler off this team.
I think the three of us say the same thing about Manson. It's the worst way to get rid of that contract is for free. Like, you know what wants to give up an asset for free.
But I think,
and that's
I think
why we
Cam
were all
Fowler
pissy at the trade
means
deadline when those guys didn't move, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But I think Cam Fowler means something a little different to Ducks fans than Manson does, because we've literally all watched him like grow up into this like adult dude.
And he's American.
You know, but like, yeah, like he came in and he was this whole, like, he's just been, you know,
he's kind of been the guy post Getzlaf to kind of be the young guy, right? You're kind of looking at, like, Korea at one point early, and, like, you know what I mean? I just...
Oh, like a leader, like, as in leadership.
Not just leadership, like, but like leadership kind of a drafted guy who becomes a big part of the team, right? I think that, like, I think it means something different, like,
you're Korea... You know Fowler's gonna be there.
Like, Korea and Getzlaf mean something different, and Fowler, I think, will mean something different than... Niedermeyer or Pronger or some of those guys that kind of got brought in via other means. It means something when you're drafted by the team.
So do you think that the franchise is going to take that route and take those three guys, or do you see them? Because I almost see Bob Murray holding firm on Lindholm, Fowler, and then Shattenkirk, because he just signed that guy.
I think it's going to be Lindholm, Fowler, and Manson. I think that's who's going to get taken. That's who's going to be protected.
Manson or no?
Yeah, I would hold Manson. I think you have to hold Manson. I think,
despite Fowler having a much better season and has looked better,
yeah, because I don't think it's the same thing. I don't.
They're both the same age.
In my opinion,
Cam makes like $2 million more.
If you keep and extend Josh Manson, what you are doing is securing your second or third line anchor for the next X amount of years while Zegras and Drysdale grow up. Manson's probably got two or three more years of being able to play 23, 24 minutes a night. After that, his body's just going to have worn down to a point. I think if you can get him at a reasonable cap hit, that's fine. But I don't think at the start of next season, you can have Fowler, Lindholm, and Manson all on this team again. I think that would be a sin. I think you have to put it. But you have to leave that weekend having moved at least one of them.
I honestly think when they signed Shattenkirk, they knew that likely that's a contract they're exposing no matter how he does. I don't think they were that short-sighted going into it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's why they gave him of the moderate trade protection.
Yeah. I think they knew for sure, like, Lindholm and Fowler were two guys that we knew that they would protect just based off their status and their contracts. I think there was definitely a toss-up between Manson and Shattenkirk, and they knew if they had to keep – or if they had all four of them still on the roster, like, exposing Shattenkirk is something that they'd be fine with. I think there was legitimate trade talks around Josh Manson at the deadline, and it just didn't materialize into what they wanted. So I think there was potentially a situation where we came in and we wouldn't even be talking about this, and it would be Fowler, Lindholm, Shattenkirk, and Manson wouldn't be here. But the fact that he is here, that we heard that they're, you know, talking about a new contract, a contract extension, they're willing to wait until the deadline to kind of see how things materialize. Like, it all signs point to him being a guy that they wouldn't expose and that they would make one of the three protections. And then that leaves guys like Fleury and Mahura and Gouley. It's funny that Fleury has jumped to the top of that list, but he has. Like, he is better than both of those guys. Now all three of those guys are exposed as well. And, you know, it presents, I think Anaheim is one of the most interesting options for Seattle, where they could go and get a Henrik or a Shattenkirk, a guy with some term and a bit more of a salary where they can use that to get to the floor. Or they could just take a young kid, you know, whether it's on defense with Fleury or Gouley or Mahura, or up front if a Volkov or a Jones or a Steele or a Lindstrom is left available, like the Milano even too, like there are options on either side of the fence for Seattle.
Let me say that. So, shit. All right, a couple things real quick. I'm sorry. I think Manson, Fowler, and Lindholm all need to be protected if they're there, because they represent the most tradable value players. That being said, I think there was enough seen from Fleury in the tiny little sample size that we saw at the end of last season to be very encouraged with what his potential upside is, especially for me as someone who doesn't think you should play your two best defensemen together. Like, I'm not a fan of the Owen Power, Jamie Drysdale pairing. I would rather have Owen Power be on a second pair or whatever and have two really high-end pairs. You know what I mean? With two guys who can anchor their own pair. So I think having Fleury, who looks like he could be a guy who could play next to Jamie Drysdale for 5 or 6 years easy, just with his ability to skate and join the rush, he's got good size, that kind of stuff. I think they need to trade one or two of these guys before the expansion draft hits.
Real quick, does Shattenkirk Kirk have a no move clause or no trade clause?
Just a no trade clause. No trade clause with 8 teams.
Yeah, but isn't a no trade clause one of those things where you can't get drafted?
No. Only a no moving clause.
No move clause. Okay.
And only if it specifies the expansion
then,
draft.
And then what I would think they would do, this is what I think Anaheim would do versus what I would do. They're going to probably they'll hold Lindholm, Fowler, and Manson and take the odd chance that they don't take Shattenkirk.
Right.
And what I wish they would do is hold Lindholm, Fowler, and Fleury and just dangle Manson out there, because my opinion, as great and nice as Manson is, I think Fleury is going to be that guy who's probably going to replace him and be less injury prone.
But they don't play the same position.
And 5 years younger and a less cap hit.
But they don't play the same style of defense.
They don't, but he's also big guy.
Fleury's more of a Lindholm than a Manson. Like,
but that's kind of the way of the league at this
point. No, I understand that. But what I'm saying is like, I don't see that Fleury replaces Josh Manson.
You can get another Manson on defense. I don't think he's irreplaceable. Sure. So if you lose him and you keep everything else, you can find that other defenseman. Or we can bring in the next round of defensemen that we got coming up. That's how I would want it to go. I don't think they'll do it. I think they're too in love with Manson, so they'll keep him. But that's where I think it should go, in my opinion.
Let's move on to the forward group then.
No, let's go back.
Go backwards? Let's talk about the goalies. Anthony Skolars or John Gibson? So with the forward group, I'll read mine off right here because I'm sure there's going to be questions. And we'll just kind of go and make a, you know, everyone give their picks, and then we'll go back and talk about them. I got Jones, Steele, Lundestrom. Unfortunately, fucking Troy Terry. Sonny Milano, Ricard Raquel, and Adam Henrique, who I chose to protect.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Go ahead, Ed.
Yeah, I think you have to protect the kid, too. There's going to be options available for Seattle no matter who you protect.
You can't give away a 23-year-old right wing. I mean, you just try as much as I despise Troy Terry's play. I can't justify giving him up for another.
Yeah, like Comtois is an easy one. Terry as well. I would keep and protect Jones.
I don't think
Comtois
is exposed. He doesn't have to be.
I don't even, I'm just looking at our list.
Yeah,
here,
he's not on Cap Friendly's list of players that you have to protect. So
Jones?
Comtois.
Yeah, Comtois, Jones, Steele, and Lundestrom are all available to be plucked. Same with Terry.
Right, Getzlaf can be picked, and he can be signed in free agency, and that would count as the pick.
So Comtois can't be picked then?
Comtois can.
He can. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so then,
Comtois has to be protected. So wait, let's do this right now. Just real quick. How many locks do you guys think there are in forward must protect? Just a number.
Think we should protect.
All right, this is going to make for great podcasting, but I'm on Cap Friendly. This says players who meet or are projected to meet the exposure requirements are highlighted in green. Okay.
That's what I'm saying. I
don't
last time I checked, Comtois was on the exempt list.
Yeah.
This is great.
God damn it, Stefan.
No, because I'm pretty sure he's been in all of Eric Stevens' stuff.
That means you guys have to call Eric Stevens out for his bullshit.
No.
I'm not going to do that. I'm going to leave that to you guys.
No, I...
So, other than Comtois, I would say Terry you have to keep. I would still say Raquel. Silverberg. I love Jones. So there's 4. Steele you have to keep. Lundstrom. He showed a lot of great promise. So there's 6. So we have to keep Comtois. That's the other one. If we don't.
Wait. You think there are 6 players that you have to protect no matter what in the forwards?
Well, those are the ones. No, those are the ones I would.
No. How many do you think you have to? Like, how many actually are there that have to be protected?
Well, since they're only plucking one, I guess none. Because they're only going to take one, but.
Officially have to be protected on a no movement clause basis.
No. I'm talking about from a players that you value perspective. How many guys to you that are available to be picked do you think are must protects?
Five.
Oh, yeah. No.
I would put Comtois as a must protect.
Let me just say this.
Comtois not in it. My bad.
Hold on. Next job, Ed. Benoit Lediagroux, Jacob Parole, Braden Tracy, Trevor Zegras, Jamie Drysdale, Axel Anderson, Ollie Eriksson Ek, Roman Durney, Lucas Dostal are all exempt.
Yeah. Okay.
I would put four. There are four forwards that I think need to be protected.
I agree with you. I think it's four.
That's but we won't agree on who.
Who are your four?
Did you do the Eric Stevens? Did you go 8-1, Steven? Because that's what he did.
No. I would do a 7-3-1, but I think for me, I don't think there are – I think it becomes about preference and upside. I just don't think there are that many players that you look at on this roster and go, they need to be protected. I think
– I would say Raquel, Terry, Jones, and Steele.
I'd add Lindstrom into that. That's all I would
– I would, if I added a fifth.
So I would say Terry, Raquel, Lindstrom – and I think I had Comtois in that group. So,
which you don't need to anymore.
So it's either Jones or Steele.
I don't think you want to lose.
I would protect
Raquel
Steele.
For
I don't think you have to protect Steele. And I don't think you have to protect Steele or Jones.
This team is protecting Jones. They love him. He's not going anywhere. They're taking Jones.
But what I'm saying is if you looked at it and you were like I actually want to protect four defensemen. Is Jones the type of player that's going to stop me from protecting what I think is a contending top four?
Yes.
No.
On this team?
I love Max Jones.
Wait.
That's not what he is. He's not that good.
Hold on.
Then that's your personal preference that you'd rather Jones and Fleury. Yeah.
That would honestly
between
almost,
Jones and Fleury. I'd keep Jones, 100%.
I would keep Fleury over Jones.
Eric Stevens has a really compelling article where what he says he thinks they're going to project that their projection is what they're going to.
I'm sure it'll line up with me. All right.
Raquel, Jones, Lundstrom, Terry. I don't mind that at all, considering Comtois and the rest of the good forwards are exempt. Right? You don't have to worry about Comtois, Parole, Tracy, or Zegras.
So he defenseman. Just takes
Fleury, Fleury, Fowler, Lindholm, Manson. Don't mind that at all.
Yeah, I would
don't
do
have to worry about Drysdale.
Yeah.
This is a really I hadn't seen this till now. That's a great 8-1 because it exposes guys that you kind of don't care about if they get picked. Delorier, Danton Heinen, Adam Henrique, Sonny Milano, Jacob Silverberg, Sam Steele for me anyway. And I mean, whatever about Volkov. Like, these guys are all guys we like when they perform well on the Ducks, but the 8-1 to me, that changed my mind. I would kind of agree with those projections there. That makes a lot of sense.
You know who Sam Steele feels like if he gets taken though? Like, it just, you get William Karlsson flashback vibes. Like, I'm not saying he's going to go
plays
there.
He's on a really
40.
Good team, right?
No, like, but that he team just feels like special. That age, that, you know, level of, I don't want to say disappointment, but, you know, hasn't fulfilled the potential yet, but had potential when he was drafted. You just feel like he would be that guy if he was to go to Seattle. And if somebody was going to overperform, like, he would be that guy. If he was to do it. And I see Eric Stevens' point. Like, I think it's a great point. Like, it comes down to preference there. Would you rather have Hayden Fleury? Would you rather have Sam Steele? I think, you know,
I would take Hayden Fleury.
I think there's a lot of us who would say we'd rather have Hayden Fleury. I think it's a toss up for me. Just based off our defense core, I'd probably rather have Hayden Fleury. And I'd take the hit on Sam Steele. Like, it sucks. But you're going to lose
if
somebody.
If he even gets picked.
Yeah. They could take Henrique. They could take Heinen. They could take Shattenkirk.
They're not taking Henrique. No one's going to pluck that contract.
What they could do is keep seven forwards and expose Josh Manson. Josh Manson's not going to go over there and be Theodore. If he goes over there, he's not Theodore, and all of a sudden it hurts us. Or you leave Shattenkirk open, it's not going to hurt us. If you protect Fleury, Lindholm, and Fowler, you're probably in the clear from that point on.
Josh Manson is literally Brent Seabrook.
Yeah, like just let those ones go.
That's not the comparison you want to make, because that's a dude who made
seven
a national
forwards,
team. Brent Seabrook was really, really good. I mean, I'm with you.
He's
like,
talking about modern day Brent Seabrook.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
No,
modern day Brent Seabrook's not great.
I don't know.
I'm sure you don't like modern day Duncan Keith either.
I could have said him easily.
I feel so fucking old every time we talk about Josh Manson. But I just think, like, now that I know for sure Comtois doesn't have to be protected, I think I would do 8-1, no questions asked, and it would be that four. I'm not losing Manson, and I'm not losing Fleury for nothing.
I think Raquel's at only forward outside the kids that you don't want to lose for nothing, right?
Yeah. He's the only player that you that if he gets taken for free, it is a net loss for you.
Yeah. Like, if Silverberg goes, you can make the argument the contract's not that great anyway.
Yeah, it's a bad contract.
Everything.
And then he goes.
Yeah, Milano. Yeah, like, there's a chance, like, if Steele gets taken or Milano gets taken, or even Heinen to some extent, like, they could go to to Seattle and do well there, but...
But what is the upside on those players, right? That's the question.
Yeah, like, it's minimal. I think Sam Steele's the big one where you're like...
Carlson didn't have a big upside.
He could lose something. That's the only one for me, and it sucks. But you're going to lose somebody good no matter what, likely, if Seattle opts to go young and take a Fleury or
Herrera. It's funny, because if it goes the way of the Athletic, I mean, yeah, they're not the end-all, be-all, but they're funny. They said that their projected player that gets plucked from Anaheim is Volkov. Could care less.
Which I would hate, but yeah.
See ya.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be fine with that if that's the case.
Okay, so who is the best-case scenario to get taken, in your opinion?
Henrique or Shattenkirk. Or Silverberg. We lose the cap hit on a guy like that. We weren't going to move a Silverberg or a Henrik without holding salary. So if you lose one of those three and you drop that cap hit for literally nothing, like, you don't have to retain salary, you don't have to give anything up, you just drop that cap hit completely, those ones are the best. Yeah, Henrik's, I think, the best just because of the term that's still on it. But Silverberg, I think, is probably second best, and then Shattenkirk is probably
actually protect Henrik, though, on the idea that they need a center other than Zegers. I mean, Jay's been saying that, and it's kind of worn on me. I agree with that notion.
Yeah, I'd go to FA.
The contract's not great, but that's an experienced guy who can play in all situations. He's not a bad player, and I know the contract's not awesome, but I think he still slots in as C1, at least for now.
I mean, really. I would, but you could
probably find a center that could probably produce at the same level he did last year or the year before at a much lower hit.
Sounds like a 1x2.
Yeah, like, I mean, just something to solidify that role until Zegras kind of fills in. But, I mean, Getzlaf, he's going to kind of drop down to second-line center, third-line center, wherever. We maybe need a number one center, but we don't need... Henrique's not number one center, and
we also know
not
that this team doesn't trust Trevor Zegers. So,
yeah,
gonna have to at some point.
They moved things around so they didn't have to give him that one extra year on his contract.
They did trust him at the last 5 or 6 games of the year, though. They played him a lot. He was our number one center, like minutes.
Oh yeah, well, once it would count as his first year of his contract, that's when they started playing him a shit ton.
Bodes well for next year.
That's what the answer is, though, right? The answer to the solution is next year the Ducks aren't going to have a number one center. What they're going to have is two-line centers and a aging, old, former first-line center playing third-line center. They're going to probably take those minutes and ride the hot hand between Lundestrom and Zegras, and they're going to try to find a way to create lines where they can both go out and be competitive. Lundestrom has shown he can drive a line on his own. Zegras is clearly expected to be the kind of player who can do that. And I'm not saying, you know, Lundestrom is a game breaker, but what I am saying is he's shown the ability to bring up the level of play. Like, he seems to get the most out of his wingers when they play with him. And you just ride the hot hand each night. Likely it's going to be going to Zegers more often than not because his upside is higher, his creativity is higher, his ability is just higher. But I don't think I don't think they need to sign a number one center. They're not that team. And
you're right. They have to trade it.
If that's the case, you always have Ryan Getzlaf. That's a situation I can 100% see Ryan Getzlaf saying, yeah, I want to sign back for another year. I think getting Henrik off of this team does much more long-term good than keeping him around to play, you know, more time than he should.
Okay, it just needs to be someone to fill that void.
We forgot Eichel is...
But you don't need someone to fill that void because they're already on the team, is my point. They're not...
Jack Eichel's a duck, so it's okay.
Well, there's that. But you don't... They don't need a first-line center. They have a first-line center. He's just 19 years old.
Let's talk about Getzlaf for a second.
20 years old, whatever he is.
On the dock, I want to talk about him for a second. Do you think he stays?
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you think he, you don't think he signs anywhere else?
He's going to do a Joe Thornton thing. He's going to do 1 year. He's already made, he's made it abundantly clear.
The you don't think he would be traded?
Oh, no.
To get assets, right?
He will do that to help the team. Mm-hmm. But his whole prerogative and his whole, you know, thing that he said to everybody is just, listen, whatever helps this franchise move forward. Because when I'm done with my career, I'm coming back here to do something with this franchise. And he has a great appreciation of somebody to stick with one franchise and be that captain, somebody who won the first cup, someone who's seen this team get, you know, go through the bad times, the good times. He's there. He's just going to do a Joe Thornton thing a little bit, where it's just sign 1 year, see where we're at, see where he helps. And if at some point he stops helping, he starts being a detriment, he's very aware of himself. So he's not going to have that pride factor where I really need to go get that cup, because in his mind, he's already won it. He's like, I just don't want to hold this team back. I just want to see it excel. And if I can help, then I will. If I start being a detriment, I'll step away. And I feel somebody that's... will take him. But someone will take him for a trade, and he's kind of the guy's like, you know, I don't really want it, but if it helps the team, I'm team first.
For him, it's not even about production. Like, he could be playing shit on offensively. Somebody will take him just because how long he's been a leader in this dressing room. That's a guy that team's looking to make a long playoff push or going to want to have around. Corey Perry's a good example of the last two seasons of why teams have brought him around. I know he's produced for Montreal, but why Dallas brought him in and why Montreal brought him in. Somebody will want Ryan Getzlaf, whether it be Vegas comes back in or something. There'll be somebody that would be willing to take him at the deadline, even if he signed a 1 year deal. And then he'd come back after that. Like, he's a guy who will re-sign in Anaheim. Might find himself in a different destination at the deadline to get more assets for the team. But I don't see him openly signing with another team and not coming back to Anaheim, unless they told him they didn't want him, which I don't think they would do.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic. So now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Yeah, he's not...
He's a made man in Anaheim. Like, he whatever he wants to do is what he gets to do.
Yeah, so I think... he is going to sign, right? I think what you're looking at is essentially two decisions in a row. The first decision is do I want to play another year? The answer seems to be yes. Obviously, that could change. He could always do the Scott Niedermayer, Timo Solani hold out for 3 months, sign back later. I know Justin Williams kind of made it cool for these dumb kids, but, you know, real ones now. But, like, I have been... I think there are two situations that I think are interesting. I don't think they will happen, but I think they're worth mentioning. The first is obviously Corey Perry seems to want to re-sign in Montreal. I wonder if he got a phone call from Corey Perry saying, hey, come play in Montreal for a year. Let's win a cup.
Close.
Why not? Like, fuck it. We made it all the way there. Let's, you know, we won with Carey Price before, Shea Weber, yada, yada. Let's just put the gold medal team from Vancouver on the Montreal team. The other situation is, again, if he gets a call from, let's say, Duncan Keith, who says, come be the second old head in Edmonton with me. I think that's a very attractive option. I think Calgary was always the most likely option, given he's from there, but I don't think that franchise is in a place like that.
Close, yeah.
But I think the opportunity, maybe, if you're Ryan Getzlaf, to go play in Edmonton with Connor McDavid and maybe have one random last 80-point season just feeding those two fucking guys on the power play.
McDavid, the second-best hockey player, right, Ed?
Behind Matthews.
No, Ed was going to say Mitch Marner.
Who won the heart? That's easier.
How many Stanley Cups is that?
Isn't that the little Native American kid?
The same number as
Matthew's heart? No? Okay.
Yeah, McDavid, I think, has won more playoff series, hasn't he? I think he won one.
Yeah, Toronto has won a playoff series.
Yeah. It's just proof that all Canadian teams suck.
All right, so before we get on to the...
But I just think that's an interesting thing, right? Like, I think if you're looking at potential places where Ryan Getzlaf would sign if he were to leave Anaheim, which he's not going to do, those are the two that stand out to me.
He also mentioned Vegas. Yeah, last year.
But that Vegas. I am convinced that is entirely because it was the semi-bubbles, and Vegas is literally a private jet flight away.
Yeah, it's
if you're
not that
Ryan Getzlaf, you can just charter a jet, fly your wife and kids over. It's not even a fucking issue.
I just don't think with a new 82-game season, he's going to go to Canada when all of his family is Southern California, born and raised.
I 100% agree. I do not think he's leaving, but I think if the
maybe a trade deadline,
are the two places I think are the most
Deadline acquisition, maybe.
Maybe. And they'll ask him, too. They won't just say, hey, listen, you're going here. They're like, hey.
Oh, yeah, no. If he, when he resigns, he'll get a full no-movement clause.
Sorry, Mr. Getzlaf. Don't want to look you in the eyes, but there's just a team that really wants to trade, and they're giving us a lot. I'm sorry.
I hope he slaps Bob Murray on his dumb bald head. So before we get to the off-season offense that's apparently available this summer, we got to talk about the new coaches that have come to Anaheim. Ducks got a new coach for the goals, and then they brought back Newell Brown. Eddie, you chopped this in here right away, so I'll let you start. How do you feel about these hirings? Do you think this kind of puts some heat on Dallas Eakins?
I think a little bit. I mean, we brought in a whole new assistant coaching staff. This Newell Brown's the third new hire. Of the offseason, right? So I think it's a bit of pressure on Dallas Eakins, but maybe more help other than anything. Like I just don't think they were happy with the assistance that they had before. They brought in a few more experienced guys with Joff Ward coming in, and then now adding Newell Brown, who's had some experience with the Ducks in the past a couple times. I think it's just adding a bit more experience. As we've heard Murray talked about it a couple times about how that's something they wanted to do to help Dallas Eakins out. He doesn't have a ton of head coaching experience, or at least a good head coaching experience himself. So bringing in some more experienced guys who've been around the league and kind of been doing this for a while, it's something that stands to help Dallas Eakins. Now, when it comes to his long-term future, I think the more surprising move was Joel Bouchard coming in as the San Diego Gulls head coach. I didn't hear anything about Kevin Dineen potentially leaving or you know, thinking about leaving, or a guy the Ducks were looking at moving on from. The Gulls had, all things considered, a pretty good season, so that was a bit surprising. And from everything I've read on him, the Montreal Canadiens organization loved him, did a great job with Laval in the AHL, and for him to come over here, like, he seems like a guy who could compete with Dallas Eakins for, or at least like compete with him for the job, like a guy that could, you know, take over from him at some point if things don't go well for Dallas Eakins. So I think that one, more so than Newell Brown coming in, it puts Dallas Eakins on the hot seat, that you have kind of a young up and coming coach who's done a good job elsewhere right behind you as a guy who could take over. So I think the Newell Brown one is definitely to help Dallas Eakins and try and see him do well for the Ducks this year, as well as the other assistant coaching ones. But yeah, Joel Bouchard coming in, I think, is a direct opposite of that, where it's another option the Ducks could look to if they move on from Eakins, as a guy who could step in and take over.
How was that Vancouver power play last year? That's where Newell Brown was, right? For the last 3-4 years?
Yeah, I saw a couple of things. Like I heard it was okay. I'd have to double check what their actual standings were, but they have some pretty good weapons to kind of work with, right? So they were ranked, it says 25th, 17.42% last year. So not great.
Henderson got off to a slow start. Quinn Hughes had a bad start. But to be fair, better than us. Yeah, I think, Eddie, I think you hit it 100%, right? I think, you know, for the last year and a half, we've heard Bob Murray make mention multiple times about wanting to bring some experience into Dallas Eakins and to provide him with some of that coaching infrastructure to allow him to succeed. And I think, you know, Daryl Sutter being brought in seemed really odd, but okay, whatever. And then you had, you know, this summer they completely revamped the assistant coaching staff. And I think if it was just Ward, Stuthers, and Newell Brown, I think it's like, okay, so what they did is they put him in a position to succeed. And, like, yeah, maybe two of those guys, you know, within the last 2 years have been in, either have been a head coach or have been where they would be an automatic interview for a head coaching job. But bringing in Joel Bouchard and letting go of Kevin Dineen, I think completely changes it. I think Joel Bouchard comes in, like he said it in his press conference. He said, they called me and they said, we have a guy we want to go with for another year. I think that's it. I think Dallas Eakins has a year. I would be willing to bet Joel Bouchard has a 1-1 contract. And he is expected to basically at the end of this season know if he's Anaheim's coach. I think he comes in and immediately jumps to the front of the line. Everybody I've heard from Montreal speaks very highly of him. He even joked that San Diego didn't use as many players as the Wall last year. You know, we saw Cole Caulfield come up with a lot of experience. He was being brought in explicitly to work with young guys. So, you know, I thought Mike Stuthers was the guy it might be, especially with Solomon being on the team or in the organization now. But it 100% looks like Joel Bouchard's the next coach of the Ducks.
At least two options, right? Between Stuthers and Bouchard, you've got not two guys who presumably would be in the discussion to take over, and then two guys who are there in a sense to help Dallas Eakins. So you've got a little bit of pressure on both ends, where you've got guys who are there to help him and potentially, you know, establish his long term future with the Ducks, and then you've got two guys who you could see taking over from Eakins, or at least be in the discussion and get an interview and see what they can do. And that I mean, that's not to say like Ward or Brown could also be in that discussion depending on how they do. I don't
what
know
a what shit end of the stick take, but... or is this really telling a Dallas Eakins here, because he's been the, you know, part of the franchise where they're rebuilding. They don't really have the best lineup. Edmonton kind of didn't have a great team there either. And so now he's here, and it's full of veterans who are underperforming and overpaid. And then you got these young guys coming up finally in Anaheim that can make some noise. And now they bring in coaching that's going to be like, hey, you had your babysitter here, but now he went to Canada to coach the Calgary Flames. And so now you're on the hot seat, dude. Sorry.
Here's two more babysitters.
Yeah, no, he's forever stuck with Bob Murray. Bob Murray is the one who championed him.
But he didn't, though. Bob Murray didn't want to hire him originally. Bob Murray, the Samuelis are the ones who were behind Bob Murray hiring Dallas Eakins. They wanted him from the beginning.
Here's the thing, is Bob Murray is on his last year for the Ducks, and whoever he put in, he's still... For whatever reason, Bob Murray is around for another year. Dallas Eakins is around for another year. What they're doing is they're setting up that transition. They brought in Solomon from the Kings. He's probably going to be our next GM, or in some fashion going to be probably pretty close to that. He brings an analytic side to things. And all of a sudden we're bringing in a new, you know, up-and-coming minor league coach that didn't really have a chance because Montreal really was going to re-sign their coach who got them to the Stanley Cup Finals for 3 years. That guy had no chance of getting to that upper level. So bring him in, do that, and this is where next year is going to be. It's going to be out with the old, in with the new, kind of flush it. They're trying to do, you know, this little transition period where we still kind of keep things in transition of power of, hey, this is what we got coming up. This is where we're at. Let's try and make sure the franchise continues on somewhat seamlessly moving forward. So I think Eakins is in his last year. Murray's in his last year. We'll see brand new GM, brand new coach, and all the other assistant coaches are there to help, you know, just make that transition a little bit easier, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you have two guys in two jobs that have underperformed for the last handful of years after having been successful within the organization before that, right? Dallas Eakins has proven to be a quality AHL head coach. There is less evidence that he is an NHL caliber coach. There's no shame in that. It's a significant jump and not everybody's capable of doing it. A lot of smart guys get, you know, don't make it. Like, I don't think that's a character judgment, but it is an issue. And so he's got one more year to prove that he can be an actual NHL head coach. And if he isn't, there are now two guys, because he was the internal candidate, I guess. But there are now two guys who are in a position to step in immediately. Same thing with Bob Murray. He's had a good run. had a lot of bit of a sloppy last couple years, and now you had Mark Madden, is that his name?
Mark Madden, yeah.
Within the organization and in a position to provide a, like you said, that real easy transition. And now they have Jeff Solomon, who's in there, who's a complete outside candidate, brings a whole new perspective, and gives them someone else. I think you're 100% right. I think this year is basically an audition for four people, but there are two guys involved that have a chance to keep their jobs.
Just looks like there's a direction, right? Like, there's a path forward. At both positions and general manager and coaching staff.
Are we being positive here for a second?
Yeah, I was going to say, no, dude, for real. Like, I was going to say, this is the first time I felt like there was some kind of idea of what's going forward. Like, you know, like, I almost wonder.
Change,
like,
we gotta... is happening, people. Change is happening.
Well, yeah,
like, Sam Willey's finally figured out that Bob Murray is that World War II vet talking about glory days when we're like, hey, man, you did great.
He's Bruce Springsteen.
You served us well. We're in a different phase of this franchise now. Time to move on. Like, yeah, he's that guy who's like living on the past, in my opinion, in the sports world, where he's just lived on his old accolades for so long and been trusted for so long, and he kicked ass for a very large amount of time.
Yes,
not even going to pretend that that's not the case.
Okay, he wasn't semi recently still a very good.
Yes, I remember talking up until 2017, this team was ultra competitive. Mm-hmm. Top of the division.
He lost every his year, fastball the team in the wagon in the playoffs.
Very good. Mm-hmm. That's the year that everything fell apart. That's a long time, and we've gone over this before. So no disrespect to him, but now is the time to kind of cut.
Dude, he sucks, and you just have coffee with him every now and again.
I don't like his train of thoughts for the past few seasons, but yeah, he's made a ton of really good moves, and I think it's great that the team is finally taking a sense of direction of, Let's get this going, because we have all these new guys coming in that are young and that have talent, and they need to be part of a successful group, or they're not going to want to stay here very long.
We're not going to set this up for another generation.
Yeah.
The encouraging sign is that these are hires that we're making that other teams are taking notice of. Like, wow, like, you know, this guy was highly thought of in this organization. Like, Stothers was highly thought of in LA's organization. So was Solomon. Joel Bouchard was highly thought of in Montreal's organization. Like, these are guys that it's not like, well, we're scraping the bottom of the barrel, picking whoever's left. Like the hirings that we've made that look towards the future here are guys that other teams really liked and weren't able to keep around for whatever reason, or we were able to kind of sell them on the vision that we have for the future of this organization, whatever it is. Like, these are legitimate hirings. Like, they point to a different future in a different direction for the Ducks, which is kind of all we've been asking for a while, right? Is just some kind of
relevance.
Direction for it. Yeah, some relevance. Something to point towards a light at the end of the tunnel. And now, you know, if Solomon is the guy to take over for Murray, and if Bouchard or Stothers is the guy to take over for Dallas Eakins, like, it you're fine with that. Like, and you're comfortable with that because, like, these are legitimate guys that would be at the top of other teams' lists as well. It's not like we've just taken whatever is available and whatever is left for us, and okay, this is who we got to go with. Because that's what it felt like with Eakins. Is we kind of
like the Godfather's retiring, and now Michael's coming to take over.
But I think that that's interesting, right? Because, like, I talked about this on the Mailbag with Sierra, where, you know, somebody asked us about, like, ownership and feeling like ownership is just watching this burn and being fine with it. And I don't feel like that's fair. And I think we've gotten some clarification on that with these last bits of moves. This is really the first moment of truth that the organization Impressive, has had right? for the owners. This is really their first time being in charge when things were weird. You know what I mean? And I think what we're starting to see right now is maybe they got to the game a little bit late, but they seem to be picking it up pretty quick. And, like, these are the kind of moves, I think, that create the feeling that, like, ownership in the organization has a sense of what they're doing.
But so, I would love to be a fly on the wall in those meetings, because I want to know who thought to go and nab these guys. Like Ed was saying, these are high-profile people they're bringing into the organization. Mm-hmm. This is something that we've been, like you guys have just said, waiting to see. Like, are we really? Nobody wanted to see another 3 or 4 years of Bob Murray and Dallas Eakins, and I know we just gave a bunch of respect to those guys and the positions they've been in, but seeing a new wave come in with a new wave of good players coming is really refreshing as a Ducks fan. Next year's probably going to suck still, But well, at least we have a point in the future where it's going to get better. We're going to see progress this year more than likely, and a lot more progress after this next season.
That's what I say, right? It's what you see is the potential for consequences, right? Which is these guys are still being given the opportunity, clearly, by being kept in their positions to prove that it's not their job.
But, and thank God the consequence isn't Daryl Sutter taking over the reins.
Exactly. Now what we're seeing is complete external candidates come into the organization and really provide a real kick in the ass. Like, you know, look, you've earned the right. This is your shot. But, like, please understand organizationally, like, we have capable people now in a position to step up. So it's a real – and I think that's the thing is it actually –
accountability.
That's exactly what I was saying. It can be interpreted as an act of accountability, and I think that that's incredibly encouraging. Wow, Bob I really Murray wasn't expecting to be positive here.
Well, Bob Murray that's and Dallas Dickens now have accountability buddies, so they have people to keep.
Aww,
buddy accountability buddies.
South Park reference. So before we end the show, let's talk really briefly here about the sudden availability of apparent goal scoring. Tkachuk, Eichel, Tarasenko, Reinhardt, Kessel, Garland, Gaudreau, Laine, Pierre-Luc Dubois.
Parise.
Yeah, Parise, yeah.
He's bought out. Parise and Suter being bought out. Please don't come here.
Did you see the cap hits for those two guys for the next 3 years after this year?
Yep. $6 million, like $7 million, $7 million.
It's the Bobby Bonilla contract, right? Yeah. They get paid for the rest of their lives?
Well, it's just years, like they were making, like, it was like $15 million if they had to just stayed on for the next 4 years. Now it's $5 million on the cap next year. 13, 14, something like
13,
that.
13, 14, 14. Because it's 2, 3, and 4. It's 6, 7, 7, and then it drops to just below 2.
Yeah, but then it's in like $1.7 million for 4 years after. So it's like, why not just take 4 years of $15 million instead of like reducing that by $2 million for the last 3 years of the contract?
Like that close to winning the Stanley Cup?
No.
I think it's the opposite. I think they might lose Kaprizov and they're just burning it to the ground.
So they get paid. But they have the rookie of the year.
But he might,
well,
he
they
might
not. That's the problem. They might not have the rookie of the year.
Yeah.
Scott might have the rookie of the year.
So they're paying Zach Parise and Ryan Suter till 2024,
2025. Yep.
Yeah.
They're paying him. If I'm reading this right, they're paying them till 2028, 2029.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Eight it doubles whatever.
My
how many
God.
Now the last 4 years of those buyouts are like $1.7 million,
or
so
like
not,
$800K. I saw too.
Yeah, it's not too bad, but it's
a pill early though. It's a fucking pill to swallow early. It's honestly,
especially the captain.
Well, that's the thing I was going to say. Well, that's the pill, right? That's the medicine, right? That's you taking your medicine for signing these fucking contracts. But the thing for me is like, if you even if you could have waited one more year, I think that would have been better because then, you know, you're probably looking at less of a spike for so many years.
I like how Bill Guerin's getting the heat for this, and he had nothing to do with those contracts.
He just literally looked at it like,
I got a house, man. I have decided, apparently, with these contracts looking at it, that, like, I'm a buyout apologist. Like, I think all buyouts are bad. I think they're a last resort. I think that's why they're bad, is they're designed to be bad. If they didn't have a real price to be paid, everyone would get it, and you would have a problem. You know, and
dude,
the players were smart enough to structure signing bonuses into their deals and all that stuff.
2023-2024, Ryan Suter's cap hit is $7.3 million.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying it doesn't suck, but what I am saying is that Bill Guerin made this choice, and I don't
contracts in the first place.
Yeah, but no one knew that in 2012. Like, the world was going to end that year, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We're only going to have to pay 1 year of this contract.
But, like, I just think sometimes, you know, judging a buyout based on, like, I get that, like, it's a hard cap and a practical thing. Like, you have to base, you know, your analysis of the cap hit as a move, or analysis of the buyout is based on the cap hit that it leaves you with. But I also think sometimes that can be missing the forest for the trees. And I think the bigger picture regarding the spots that it opens up in the lineout, the vacuum that it opens up in the leadership core, like the signal, the change that it signals to the organization and for the organization internally and externally, like
Yeah, but not for another 5 years.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Sometimes it just sucks.
But, Steven, you're looking at it from like from kind of like rose-colored glasses, okay? Because had this team won a cup, gone to a conference final...
They would be buying him out.
...ultra-competitive, then nobody would give a shit.
But they would be buying him out. That would be the difference.
Yeah, okay, right. But now they just extended the pain. They've extended this longer for this franchise. They've never... When was the last time the Minnesota Wild got out of the first round, let alone the second round? They've never been out of the second round. I guess the Ducks 1 year, right? Didn't they play in the conference final 1 year? Or am I misremembering?
No, I think that was the Western Conference, the semis.
Western Conference final.
Yeah, I don't think they've won more than one round.
Awful.
No,
they went to the Western Conference final against the Ducks.
This is a desperate ploy by Minnesota to restart everything. Mikko Koivu's gone. Now it's like, okay, we're moving out these big contracts. Like they didn't, honestly, I don't think they had to do this. I think they could have just waited out their last 4 years, and it probably would have been exactly the same, just based on the buyout hits for years 2, 3, and 4.
This is what I'm saying. But this is what I'm saying. Fuck, man, I'm gonna sound like such an asshole. Like it bothers me a little bit because it's so very much about on paper numbers. There is a part of this where all of these people go to work together every day.
Yeah. Okay, man, but they literally have made out of the first round twice since 2013.
Right.
They've first round or not qualified the playoffs since 2015.
But what you're doing is justifying. That's what I'm saying. You're justifying why you get the two guys who are over in charge of that whole era out of there. They've had their chance. It didn't work out. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. You move on.
No, I think but it's not wanted that. Out too. It's literally, you know, if you think of a franchise as a person or a player, they traded a sprained knee for a broken leg. Like, they screwed themselves for much longer on a broken leg than they would have a sprain. Like, a sprain hurts for a little while.
I don't agree.
But if you do a broken leg, you are longer recovery period. And that's where I think they're at.
Does this not seem like a favor to Parise and Suter in some sense? That, like, I feel like Parise wanted out. He almost went to...
payout for God
almost,
sure.
Yeah, he almost went to the Islanders.
He got two payouts.
At the deadline, it didn't work out. Like, I could see this.
They had no idea it was coming.
In some sense, as... Are you sure?
Yeah, Russo reported that... So, basically, what happened is... Guerin called Suter to tell him Suter didn't answer. So, he called Parise to let Parise know. Then he hung up with Parise. Before he could call Suter, Parise called Suter. Or Suter called Parise somehow, but Parise told Suter that they had both gotten bought out. And Guerin didn't get a chance because Suter didn't pick up on the first. Like, neither of these guys knew this was coming. I know that the New York Islanders things were legit, which is why people think he might end up there anyways because Lou's there. I know that was a real thing. I think maybe if either of them would have been open to moving, it would have been those two. It would have been him. But I don't think either of them expected this by any means.
All right. Let's get back to the...
Sorry, I feel like I'm being an asshole.
Either way, they made $100 million, so I don't feel bad.
Yeah. No.
Or $98 million.
And they got to play in their home state, too. So they got a nice little deal there.
I like how their contracts come out to $98 million and $6.
Well, that last $6 is really important for tips and stuff.
Oh, my God. $25 million in bonuses. They got paid.
Yeah, they got paid well. All right, Eichel. The most recent news is that the Sabres asking price is ridiculous and nobody wants to pay it.
Shocker.
And Zegras is apparently the piece again. Not surprising that Buffalo wants and that Anaheim won't budge on in terms of including.
Don't blame him. Wouldn't do it either.
So apparently, and I saw this passingly today, I don't exactly know the source of where it came from, but I saw it on Twitter, is that the Sabres are now open to reducing their offer or reducing their asking price on Jack Eichel, not by a significant amount, but maybe taking guys like Zegras out of the discussion because nobody's just willing to include them in. And the weird thing was is the Sabres were selective apparently on how or who got access to Jack Eichel's medical records. You had to somehow prove that you were legitimately interested in Jack Eichel. I don't know that process.
Yeah, no, that's smart. That,
but you had to prove you were significantly interested in him to get access to those medical records, which is smart on the Sabres case. I don't know how they were determining who was interested enough to get those, probably just based off what their offers were.
Yeah.
But I would assume Anaheim could be one of those teams who've gotten access to them. It doesn't sound like they're out of it by any means. So it still could happen. Like, I think of all these people we have here in Tkachuk and Tarasenko, Reinhardt, Gaudreau, Laine, like, I think the most likely of them to actually come to Anaheim is probably Eichel. It doesn't mean I think it's likely.
Garland.
Of all of them, Eichel feels like
Arizona's out of the division. Sorry. No, I'd agree with Pat. I think Garland's probably the most the easiest piece to pick up. I think Eichel.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a fun fantasy. It's great. You get a franchise player. That doesn't happen all the time. But you're also talking about a guy who's got a significant injury that wants to do significant or, you know, a procedure that's never been done on an NHL player. Are you willing to risk what they're asking just to see if he might be a shell of himself or, you know, like get back to form? I don't know. I mean, that's just so significant out there as a possibility where things are just going to go wrong. So why risk it? I mean, when he
he's also rumored to go into Buffalo too.
So. Oh, yeah, well,
Boston.
Yeah.
He'll go somewhere, I'm sure. But from an Anaheim perspective, I don't see very many attractive. I don't see a lot of people being attracted to Anaheim where they want to go there. About the only one I would say is maybe Garland because it's not that far away. And Arizona might be able to make that trade since we are no longer supposedly going to be in the same division. So,
in all honesty, Eichel has no fucking choice where he wants to go. It's wherever the Sabres end up sending him.
That trade without a deal signed.
Anaheim's not going away, I think, in these discussions just because are the assets we have.
Like, no one's gonna want to get Eichel unless they know they can get a deal signed when he's a UFA.
He has five years remaining.
Right.
Yeah, no. So they're getting him for the rest of his prime.
What I mean by that is no one wants a guy who doesn't want to play there. That's what Buffalo already has. So like, why would you want a guy who's going to hate coming to your city is my idea.
I think he just wants out of Buffalo, honestly.
I don't see Buffalo being good in any capacity in the next 5 years anyway. So
like, there's
could be better. Except Ottawa with Pierre.
There's teams where he would probably rather go. Like the Rangers or something like that, better chance of winning. But at the end of the day, like, I think he just wants out of Buffalo. Yeah. And whether, you know, Anaheim's not a better destination per se in terms of what, you know, early returns for him to be on a good team, but it's not Buffalo, right? Like, I think that's more so what Eichel and his camp are concerned with is let's get out of Buffalo and see how things go. Now, you know, Anaheim, one of their concerns will be like, is he going to want to stay here? Is he going to enjoy playing here? Like, any team that is going to trade the assets it's going to take to get Jack Eichel are going to be concerned with that. And I'm sure as trade talks get more serious, discussions with Eichel and his agent would be part of those discussions before a trade goes through and making sure that, you know, for one, he wants to come here, he's excited about coming here, he's excited about playing here, and that would ultimately play into the final decision. But Anaheim is going to be involved in this until it eventually happens, just because of the assets we have, the pick we have this year. The top end assets that Buffalo are looking for. We have Zegras and Drysdale, who are two guys that will draw interest from a number of teams, especially Buffalo with Eichel. So I don't think we're going to go away from these discussions, whether it gets done or not. I think I don't think it gets done with the Zegras or Drysdale going the other way.
Buffalo, this deal's done, I think, by end of draft.
It's got to be. They can't wait too long.
It'll need to be done before the expansion draft too, I think.
It's got to come down it's got to come down quickly, because you don't want to go into free agency if you're a team and not know if you're going to have a guy who makes $10 million on your books, right? Like, you want to know kind of your direction of where you're going. Now, for Anaheim's case, maybe it's not. They're not big time free agency players, so it's. If they're the team to get it done, you know, waiting until after the draft and everything isn't necessarily as big a deal for a team that needs to re-sign guys, or, you know, a team like the Rangers I already mentioned who have some guys they want to re-sign and could be looking at other options in free agency. Anaheim's a bit different in that sense, but you would think this would be wrapped up by the end of the week or at least before the expansion draft, like you said, Steven.
Yeah,
it's up to big baby Buffalo management.
Yeah, I mean, if you're Kevin Adams, you want the picks, right? You don't want the prospects. You want the possibility to trade the picks for other picks. You want the possibility to make another
move. They're just never going to get what they want, though.
But no. I'm just saying you can't make this trade after the draft unless you think there is a package out there that doesn't include someone from this draft in it that makes sense for you. Because you want, right, that 3 pick or that 9 pick or whatever it ends up being. Look, as far as Eichel's concerned, if I'm Anaheim, I'm saying there are 4 players that are off limits. Segrish, Drysdale, Lindholm, and Gibson. Anybody else you can have, I don't care.
Gibson?
Those are the 4 guys I won't give you. Everybody else you can have. I'm perfectly fine with that. I make that Eichel trade. I get that he's not going to, that maybe there's going to be some risk of, you know, maybe potentially him not being happy in California, but I'm going to bet.
I'd agree with that.
I am going to bet that I can get a 24-year-old American professional athlete to enjoy living in Orange County enough that he's not going to care.
Yeah,
it's Orange County. It's the beach. It's a neck injury. It's a significant injury, but the upside on him is if you see the medicals and you have reasons to be, you know. But I'm just saying, like, I would make the trade. There's nobody on the board other than those 4.
But that's their biggest contention is how do we solve this injury? Like, literally, they are willing to part ways because he wants to be.
But it's not just in a certain way. That's the breaking point.
What does he want to have done? Is he going to get something?
No, he wanted like something that's never been done on a NHL player. Apparently, it's been done on
MMA guys.
Yeah, like Regenikeem, where they put in regenerative cells into your neck.
Yeah,
is that what they're doing?
I think that's what he wants.
I have no idea.
The alternative is having his neck fused.
Yeah. Oh, which you don't want to do as an athlete.
Yeah, but maybe they do that injection and it doesn't work and then it has a neck fused and you're screwed anyway. So, once again, it's like he wants this treatment. He wanted it earlier. Sabres didn't want to give it to him. Then there was some argument over it. And now they're like, all right, well, we'll just trade you. And now somebody else has to take that on and go like,
but it's
well,
not. But it's
works.
Been four. It's been 3 or 4 years now of that team being dog shit. It's not just that it's a medical issue. Like that team has been hot garbage, despite
been,
the fact
he's
that
been
he
heart and soul with that team too. So I mean, he hasn't really kind of like ran away from the team just being crappy. He's like, listen, it's gonna be crappy. Edmonton's crappy, and McJesus is still there. I can make this work. And now he's like, I've got this injury, and I can't really make it get any better. And so like now it's just. You know, him going like, I want to do this. And they said, no, you can't do that.
No. Now, I'm just saying, like, he's not leaving just because of the neck thing. What I'm saying is it's the breaking point.
Michael wants a cervical disc replacement surgery.
There you go.
Sounds pretty intense.
Apparently MMA guys have had
cervical?
It and been fine.
Yeah.
From his cervix?
You're an idiot. I knew you were going to say that. We need a bleep button on the podcast.
What?
Just cut that
Steven,
out.
Steven's
because
frustrated.
These moments are the best.
Stupid. Not even funny.
Steven got mad for like 2 seconds. You should have seen his face. You should have freeze-framed that. That was great. Look at him. He's still mad. He's still mad.
Saying it was a cervical replacement surgery.
You're an idiot.
I'm going to go jump
in
the ocean.
That is unheard of on a male athlete.
Derailed. Well, let's... let's wrap
really,
the show on this. let's talk about what we're going to be doing next. We have the expansion draft coming up, which we just did the preview for here in about 8 days to come, or less than 8 days now. It'll be on Wednesday, the 21st. Then the NHL draft starts next Friday and Saturday. So big days coming up here in the NHL. We'll be definitely back with a. Are we doing a draft preview of any sort, Ed? Are we talking about doing that, or are we just going to look at a free agency preview?
No, we're going to do an FA preview for sure, but the plan was to do another draft preview, whether that is getting somebody on like Steve Cornelius again to do an interview and do that, or just a quick update on the last one that Steven and I did, which was way back in February, I think. So just a bit of an update draft preview. So whether it's with somebody or just all of us, we'll be attempting to do one of those. But in terms of like for sure shows, we'll have a free agency preview and definitely a draft recap, which will be shows that would be, you know, FA preview would be before August, and draft recap could probably push into August, depending on how close of a deadline we're working with the free agency and the draft.
Or we just do a giant show and combine both, and things would get crazy. We could do that too. So
yeah, I know it's going to be a short window to turn things around with how quickly they're jumping from expansion draft to draft to free agency. So
hopefully a lot of chaos. That'll make it more fun for us. But thank you, everybody, for tuning in tonight. And we'll be talking to you guys very soon. Keep up to up to date with us on Twitter so you can see everything. Oh, Steven's waving me off. Or is he saying bye? I can't tell.
No, I was doing Jason's bit.
He's doing the hands. Yeah,
that's mine.
I stole Jason's bit. Everyone.
Try not to smile.
Have a great one. Talk to you soon. Bye, Jason.
Bye, everyone.